When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
So season one ends, and, you know, like idiots, we all thought season two would pick up where season one ended. And then here come these dock workers, and no one has any idea what's going on, including us. I think David, of course, knew, but we were all scratching our heads, wondering if we even have a place in the new world. It was quite confusing. And then I was just, I ended up being delighted with season two. I thought that was a really great plot. But I was, of course, very glad that the Barksdales and I were still around.
Hello, I'm Dave.
And I'm Kobe.
And we are the hosts of The Wire Stripped. It's the show where we watch HBO's The Wire week in, week out.
And you don't just hear from us, you hear from other amazing voices from the cast, voices from the crew, and your voices too.
Yes, today we're going to be watching Season 2, Episode 9. It's called Stray Rounds, for a very particular reason.
Yeah, you find out quite quickly, this cold open is dark. If you have anything to say about this episode or anything else to do with The Wire, please do get in touch with us. We'd love to hear from you at The Wire Stripped on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And also you can give us an email, burner@thewirestripped.com.
Yeah, do get in touch. We love talking to all of you. So without much more of this ado, here's our chat about... I'm just changing up that expression. Here's our chat about Stray Rounds, which we recorded, as always, on the streets of London. Actually, we were at a pub this time.
It was a nice pub in the summer, so it was very warm, and the beer was lovely.
Back in the summer, yeah, remember that? Let's not talk about the weather. There's enough to talk about here if we start talking about the weather. Here's us on Stray Rounds.
He got the fire and the fury at his command. Well, you don't have to worry when you hold on to Jesus' hand. We'll all be safe from Satan when the thunder rolls. You gotta keep the devil way down in the hole.
Right, here we are. It's Dave and Kobe again.
Howdy.
And we have watched Season 2, Episode 9. It's called Stray Rounds.
Yeah.
We're recording to you, not so live, from outside what we can only presume is a brothel.
Yep.
But we don't actually know where any brothels are.
I prefer the term cat house.
So fair enough, yeah. It's a cat house. Oh, we should have gone to a vet's or something.
A house full of cats.
All right, fine, you got us. We're outside a pub.
Yep.
Okay?
Yep.
We're recording outside a pub. But for all we know...
It could be a cat house. It's got rooms.
There could be all number of illicit affairs going on in those rooms. You could have McNulty, people doing fake British accents up there. We are in Britain, so that probably wouldn't pass muster. This is a good episode.
Mm.
A lot happened here. So we're going to, as always, split it into separate storylines. First storyline, let's check in with the gang down in the Subotka detail.
Yeah.
After the last episode where Frank was suspicious and sent a clean container through... things are starting to look a little quiet. They're taking the Greek and crew are taking things easy, and I think the detail are starting to notice that that things have been switched up. They're not getting as much through. But meanwhile,
What they can pursue is McNulty infiltrating the brothel with his terrible British accent.
Yeah, that's saying where they're sitting around the table.
This is Hannah from the Standard Issue podcast.
Deciding who's going to go to that is really, really funny because there's that scene in which that they decide that Carver's too attractive and everyone else gets the ump about it. It brings us to, I think that's another thing about series two, it's particularly the episode we watched in this one. It's really, really funny. It's got some proper, really funny moments. And yeah, McNulty in that brothel is definitely one of them.
So we were out at lunch one day and he began talking about, I don't know how the conversation got that way, but he began talking about where he lived in New York and he thought there was a ghost in his apartment.
Here's Al Brown, who played Valchek, talking about Dominic West, who played McNulty.
He's talking about it at the lunch table, and I'm just eating. I don't know no ghosts, and I'm just eating. So eventually he stopped his conversation, and he grabbed his tray, and he headed up to, you know, dump off the dirty dishes, right? Yeah. But while he was talking, he had... And I knew the role he played in The Wire. He had, obviously, an English accent. I mean, in his conversation. So I turned to the guy next to me, and I said, what the hell do you think he was doing when he told his story? What is he doing, auditioning for a Shakespearean role? And he's trying to practice his fucking English accent? And I thought the guy was going to lose all the spaghetti he had on his plate. Okay, right. And I didn't know that he was from England. I didn't know it. He certainly wasn't talking without an English accent at lunch. So that meant he could turn it on and off whenever he wanted to, right? Yeah. Always struck me as kind of neat in that he could, that he could do that, turn it on and off. He was complaining about living somewhere in New York where he thought some ghost lived in the house or something like that. I don't know.
So at this point, did you know that Dominic West was British?
I'll be honest. The first time I watched this, I did not.
Yeah. No, I had no idea. So it makes it kind of interesting that he's a British actor playing American, putting on a fake British accent.
Yeah. And deliberately hamming up the accent.
Absolutely.
Because he has to.
Yeah. But did it say what at some point? I don't know if that's...
That might be in your memory, but I hope he does. And if he did, then our magic producer Tom is going to insert it right now. We also get well, let's talk about McNulty and the brothel.
Well, yeah,
this is classic McNulty shenanigans, isn't it?
This is one of the stories that, as you think about The Wire and McNulty, this is one of the things that comes to mind. Well, I should say, in the previous episode, he tried to call up the cat house, but they were like, dude, you sound like a cop. Are you a cop? He's like, no, I'm not a cop. I'm not a quap. And they go, well, no sex for you tonight.
I just want to pay for some sex, yeah, is all.
And, yeah, Lester goes, can you pretend you're from out of town? He pretends he's British because he is British. And, yeah, that's they don't figure his ruse. And the setup for this is quite... It's elaborate, because they get this ridiculous kind of man pouch thing, which is what all the Europeans carry, apparently. Yeah. You're a European, I'm
all
a European.
All of Europe.
Yeah, all European males.
We were all doing it back in 2002. Do you not remember?
What was that?
Oh, man, the man pouch.
I've never seen that thing before in my life.
I mean, that's it. I've got a leather satchel next to me now.
That's a leather satchel.
A million miles away from
that's me. Gone back. Tom Brown school days, you had leather satchels. I've never once seen, outside of The Wire in this episode, that brown man pouch thing.
You're right, you're right. It was about a quarter of the size of this satchel, yeah, I have next to me. It was definitely a purse.
Tell us about what happens when it gets in there, because this is what we're alluding to.
Well, he's got his call signal, which he eventually uses, but yeah, sort of classic McNulty, he sort of, I don't know, is he stalling or was he just kind
spot
of...
Spot on is his call signal, isn't it?
Spot on. That was it. Very good.
Spot on. It means exactly. And remember, they have to bring up the money and the sex first, then an overt attempt to engage.
spot on.
But everybody, sort of the rest of the gang, infiltrate the place at. it's very well shot. This whole thing, they burst in on the room and McNulty, and he's sort of, I don't know.
In flagrante.
Yeah, I was going to say mid-coitus.
Yeah.
But either way, it makes us sound very, very fancy, doesn't it? There you go. There's the tone lowered.
He's having sex with two prostitutes, and no one...
He's compromised.
Yeah. Well, no one even bats an eyelid, really, do they? They're just like, oh, McNulty.
Oh, McNulty.
Yes.
Wah, wah, wah. I feel like this is a scene from the sitcom that I pitched in season one between where McNulty and Rawls are roommates.
Sure.
Yeah. I feel like this is a sort of a classic sitcom scenario that McNulty's got himself in. Oh, McNulty.
Yeah.
Who is it?
Baltimore Police.
What do you want?
Lock your ass up.
You're late.
Here's our chat with Deirdre Lovejoy, who played Rhonda Perlman. Apologies for the audio quality on this one. It's not the best, but her story is so good, we did want to include it.
Yes, of course it's awkward. I mean, there's no way around two people who don't know each other, or even the dude of each other, pretending to have sex with, you know, pasties on various parts of their bodies in a tiny room, and people are screaming at them with a camera in their face. It's odd. It is uncomfortable by very definition. You know, you do that on a closed set, you try to have fun. In my case, it always was fun. I mean, I didn't have to do it often, but when I did, it was always with Dominic, who's, you know, just a lovely, ridiculously naughty man. My first real day of work on the show was the day that Dominic and I were filming the scene where Jimmy comes to Rhonda's house and they wind up having sex, and she, you know, tosses him out, which is the beginning of their whole story. You know, and my main memory of getting to know Dominic is having him, you know, fairly much buck naked on top of me and saying, "Oh, I was on top of Renee Zellweger last week." I didn't quite know how to respond to that, except, how nice. And we dove into the scene from there. We were shooting the first episode, and I had a house that was established. We had a house that was established as Rhonda's house. We were filming upstairs. The family was still in the house. We were shooting downstairs. They were upstairs on the fourth floor, and I did hear lots of crazy sex sounds and a Hungarian screaming at the top of his voice, "Climax now." And we were never allowed back in that house again. They thought we were doing porn, and that's not coincidentally why Rhonda winds up living in Federal Hill in later seasons. She was kicked out of that neighborhood. But I find it hilarious. I mean, they really did. They legitimately thought we were shooting porn.
So McNulty decides, because things are quiet, they decide to try and tap the FBI because maybe they got some information on Double G, potentially. So McNulty hits up his old friend Fitz, who they're kind of on funny terms after the last season, mm-hmm. and where he basically walked out and called them all pricks. But, you know, water under the bridge, and Fitz decides to help him out. And he finds out that the case has been sealed, the case on Glikas, by somebody called Agent Kutris. Mm. So we get him on the phone, and Agent Kutris sort of acts all shady.
Fobs him off, doesn't he?
Yeah, he's like, "Oh, don't worry about it. There's nothing to worry about." And then turns out he's on the payroll of Spiros and the Greek, so he rings them up and gives them the tip-off that they are onto them.
Yeah, yeah. So storyline two, we have Nick going back to the Greeks, and Spiros puts him in touch with White Mike to do business.
And they're old school friends, it turns out.
Oh, is that right? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Or they knew each other from back in the day.
Yeah, they knew each other from back in the day. Yeah. Look at us.
It's like a school reunion.
Yeah. And Spiros, just to keep the kind of flow of containers going, says, here's some clean containers. You guys can do your shady shit and make sure these are the clean ones. So if the police stop them, they don't realise what's going on. And we see the Greek having dinner with Vondas and Eton, and the madam from the cat house having a bit of banter about what's kind of going on here. They said something's going on, but they can't quite work it out. But now they have Kutris back in. They have the Kutris backing them up, basically. They feel they've got some kind of protection.
I thought that was an interesting scene, seeing like it's like the puppet masters all at the table, really, wasn't it? And the this is where the epigraph came from: the world is a smaller place now. The Greek
says that.
Which I feel like it's quite a prescient thing to say. I think he was, you know, deliberately referring to technology and texting. I think texting is a big part of this.
This season, yeah.
This season.
This is really about, we're starting to see, at the same time on the docks, Frank Sobotka goes to that presentation about, you know, the robots working the docks, and Frank Sobotka calls that a nightmare. He saw a horror movie.
Here's Bailey from the Rewired podcast, also all about the wire.
Where they were, you know, they're saying, well, this is lowering workplace injury and it's safer for the stevedores. And he makes the point, well, you can't get hurt if you're not working, right? At the same time, Stringer is struggling in the towers and with the drug market because he's lost his good supply chain. Prop Joe is working hard at trying to set up this co-op sharing of the real estate. And Stringer, being the businessman, can see the reasonableness of this, but also, you know, then there's Avon in jail, who I think in many ways is like actually Frank Sobotka, in that whereas Frank Sobotka is a stevedore through and through, Avon Barksdale is a gangster through and through. And he just wants to be a gangster for the sake of being a gangster because he feels the pride in that. But in both of those industries, the industry itself is failing them and they're not able to keep up.
So the next storyline is it's a big part of this episode is the shootout. And I think the cold open led with this.
Yeah.
It's the crew that Bodhi and his guys moved out of their corner in the last episode. They've come back. Mm-hmm. They're fully loaded and there's a massive shootout. And we see this whole thing from the point of view of a local resident, mother of two, in her apartment. And it's really, really tragic how all this plays out, I thought.
Yeah, the kids are just getting ready. She's getting the kids ready for school and says to the oldest kid, go upstairs and get your clothes together. A shootout starts and she just says, get down, basically. And what I find tragic, I mean, obviously the heinous thing happens in the fact that he gets shot with a stray round, which is the name of this episode, and killed. But it seems like this is like they've done this time and time before.
Yeah.
Get down, stay away from the windows, wait until the shops stop, and then we'll get on with our lives again. But this time they didn't get on with their lives again.
Exactly. It's like a fire drill for her.
Yeah.
The way she's going about it.
Yeah, she went straight to the bathroom.
Very, very sad.
Yeah. But this accelerates things in the police force because you can have soldiers killing soldiers, you can have people in the game killing people in the game, but once you kill a 9-year-old, then that is cause for shit to go down. And this brings out Rawls, it brings out Norris, and it brings out Buddy Colvin.
Yes.
And Dennis Mello.
Major Howard Bunny Colvin. So yeah. For anyone, if this is anyone's first run through of The Wire, we won't give away anything, but watch out for this guy because he's an important character.
Because he's excellent.
And he is brilliant.
And the chap next to him, Dennis Mello, is his sidekick. And Dennis Mello is played by the real-life Jay Landsman.
Oh, there you go. I didn't know that.
Did you not know that?
No.
There you go. So it's great. First appearance from them and, you know, commanding the scene and understanding what's going on already.
I thought this was really interesting. So you get this, the dynamic between Rawls and Colvin here. You know, Rawls has that quite a powerful line.
It used to be when a 9-year-old kid hit the pavement, a district commander would be there within minutes. I guess we're living in a brave new world. I was in Washington with Burrell when I heard.
Which is a real dig at him straight away. You know, and Bunny explains that Burrell had taken him to D.C. with other district commanders to attend a seminar. You get so much in those two sentences. Basically, you get that Rawls is dissatisfied with how the upper brass are running things, and you get, and so is Colvin. Colvin's not happy that he was not around and that he was having to grease some wheels up at some seminar. But it shows what how the upper brass are treating the police force and how they're using their resource. So it shows us that, tells us a lot about Bunny. He's somebody who's not happy playing Burrell's politics game.
No.
And he's somebody who, as we see in the course of this episode, questions things.
Yeah.
And he questions,
Why are we doing things?
Mm. Exactly. Because Rawls tells them to go and take all the drug dealers they can while they look at the homicide.
Yeah, they go around and knock heads, don't they? And he's just like, this is, what's going on? What's the point?
What are we achieving here? And you get a sort of a, it could be read as defeatism, but I think it's something more. It's the seeds to a very interesting storyline for Bunny Colvin.
Yeah. A good point as well is, so String, obviously String is pissed off that this kid's got shot, and he's rightly said, look, the police have to act up. They have to. And I'm quite surprised at this point that this could be anyone who's involved in that shootout. I would not have been surprised if String has said, well, I'm just going to kill you now. I'm going to make
you think he would have done it?
Well, he would have.
Yeah.
I don't know why.
Business decision
or just kick them out of the gang. I think it would have been well within his rights to say, I don't want anything to do with you because you have properly fucked up. I didn't ask you to take the corner and then you've caused this bullshit and with a kid involved, and I was going to just come back on us, limit how much we can make money. So get out.
But he's probably playing damage control. He's probably, knowing Stringer, he's like, if he kicks these guys out, they'll become even more dangerous.
Yeah.
And if he kills them, then he's going to lose the loyalty of his other guys.
Sure.
And also, I'm not sure if Stringer has the teeth for that kind of move either. I mean, we know that he can get people killed if he has to, but it tends to be a last resort for him, I think.
Yeah, that's a fair point.
But he's definitely not happy with Bodhi.
No.
But, and he kind of gives Bodhi a bit of a lesson here. He tells him you need to have more flexibility and you need more intelligence and you need to think about things. And he's given him the kind of opposite lesson to what Avon would give him, I think. I feel like Avon would have rewarded this if Avon was there.
Rewarded Bodhi?
Yeah.
You at least tried.
Yes.
Fair play to you. Okay.
I think Avon would be planning the next move in retaliation.
Right.
To that, because that's how Avon plays. Avon plays for territory, and he fights for space, and he fights for control, whereas Stringer fights for the dollar.
But String tells him to get rid of the guns, which they try to do.
They just got really unlucky, didn't they?
They did do.
Yeah, so they throw it over the side of a bridge, and a boat happens to be passing. But you think, I mean, I kind of think, why not just walk up to the bridge and be
yeah,
like,
yeah, of course. Whoop. Just look over. Whoop. Nothing's there.
That's the sound effect of a bag going over a bridge.
What? Whoop, whoop. Can you explain to me, or can any listeners explain to me, why they get rid of the guns in such way? Because obviously the plan was for it to go into the river. Are the chances of it being of them being found just so infinitesimal if they go into the river that that's the best option? Because I would have thought, I don't know, A, hold on to them and do something more befitting of how to get, you know, smelt them down or do something, or is it just?
I guess it's access. They don't have access to.
Yeah. Okay.
That kind of. It's probably just a quick win, isn't it?
Sure.
Yeah. I don't know. So get in touch, drug dealers.
Yeah. I always just feel that they could like dredge the river and find these guns and pin them on.
Well, Frank's obsessed with dredging the canals, isn't he?
That's what he wants.
Imagine all the guns he's going to find.
But yeah, of course, it lands on a boat and the police bring him in, bring Bodhi in, bring the guns in. And another interrogation scene with Bodhi, this time with Norris and Cole. And
this is a great scene.
Yeah.
This is. I love when they showcase Bodhi's intelligence. Like, he's such a smart guy. For anyone who doesn't remember, the police tell Bodhi, in our classic police bluff, which we've seen in so many crime shows, We've got you. We've got your fingerprints. We've got the weapons. We've got everything we want. Confess. And he's like, so they got six guns in front of him, and he's like, which one is mine? And they can't tell him. I think they do, to be fair. I think Norris picks one.
Yeah.
And then Bodhi just kind of leans back, and you know it's over.
Lawyer.
Yeah. Lawyer.
My last message was definitely a bit too long, so in under a minute, all I can say is I have just watched the scene where McNulty is absolutely off his rocker, just, you know, saying he's getting a cab, then we hear him driving down the road noisily and smashing his car, and not once but twice, then banging a waitress, and you just think, what a hero, and also what an absolute joke of a man. Bless him. He's an absolutely brilliant character, played even more brilliantly by Dominic West, who I don't think gets enough credit, really. He's so consistently good, he's sort of taken for granted, but he has so much energy when he's on screen. So, McNulty, slantcha.
Thanks very much for that message. If you want to hear your voice on our show, leave us a burner message. Kobe, tell the nice people how they can do it.
The nice people, all the nice people, you can leave a message on a burner phone by leaving a WhatsApp voice memo, or WhatsApp voice memo, which is completely free. Go to WhatsApp and leave us a message, +447534831658. I'm trying to make a jingle there myself as I read it out.
Yeah, you got a little bit lyrical there.
Yeah, it was a bit. Let's try it again. +447534831658.
Now I feel like we're working at a call centre. Hello, you're through to the wire stripped. How may I direct your call?
I used to work at a call centre. And yeah.
Oh, well, so then you got the skills, man. We gotta set this up.
That's it. And also, if you can't use WhatsApp or the WhatsApp magic, then leave us a record as a message on your favourite voice memo app, and then send it to burner@thewirestrip.com, which a fair few of you guys have been doing, because, to be honest, it's easier.
And this week we want to know, what is your favourite season of The Wire?
Yes.
And be careful not to go into too many spoilers here, because some people are watching for the first time.
Yeah, keep it short, no spoilers. So the next point to talk about is, yeah, East West. The guys getting together because the West Side has a real estate, East Side has the drugs connect, let's get together, let's make more money. Which is fine if you're Stringer and Prop Joe, because they like making money and they don't like the people dying unnecessarily. Even more than that, they like making more money, which is great. I love Prop Joe. I love Stringer Bell.
If the world was made of Prop Joes and Stringer Bells, then the drug trade would just go so smoothly, wouldn't it?
It would do.
No one would have to die.
But String kind of runs the deal via Brianna, just to kind of say, hey, we're going to do this thing because we're going to make more money. Brianna's got the heart of a Barksdale and still runs it by Avon. And the point here is that Stringer saying, we need to join with these guys because we don't have the muscle to fight. We don't have Weebay, we don't have Stinkum, we don't have Little Man, we don't have our crew behind us, so we need to cooperate so everyone rises together. Which makes sense in a socialist world. So he's an economist and a socialist. So Brianna speaks to Avon, and Avon comes back and says, I've got a guy, he's called Brother Muzzone. He'll be there at the end of this episode.
Do you think it was weird that we don't see Avon in this episode? That we hear all this third hand through Brianna?
Not so weird, but...
I wonder, was that scheduling conflicts or something? Or?
It might have just been... It probably wouldn't have added anything to the episode.
Maybe.
So yeah, Brother Muzzone comes from New York.
I think Brother Muzzone is just fascinating. And as you say, we only see him for a handful of episodes over the course of the show. But he, I think, in the audience has left a pretty indelible mark.
Here's Kelly, also from the Rewired podcast.
And I love the contrast between him and Omar, both in their manner of speaking, their manner of dress, really kind of fascinating juxtaposition between the two. And I think what's really interesting about Brother Muzzone is that the show sets him up before we meet him as like the ultimate hitman. And there is something a little bit chilling in the way that he is so just not monotone, but yeah, calm and very methodical in his manner of speaking. And it's hard to get a read, I guess, on Brother Muzon's character. And that's one of the kind of unsettling things about him.
Okay, so the last storyline, let's check in back at the docks. And we don't get a lot of the docks in this episode, but we get a little bit of Ziggy. So there's a scene where he comes out of the pub and Nick sees him and he tries to fight him. He's really angry, and we find out that he's angry because his pet duck has died. It died of alcohol poisoning.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I don't know how many shots a duck can take, but I can maybe take 3 before I'm on my back. And that duck was going for it.
Yeah, that duck had a lot more than 3. Yeah, that duck was more hardcore than both of us combined, for sure.
Although we have had an Irish breakfast, so we know what we can do as stevedores.
Yes, although we were pretty much done for the day after that. The day was a write-off.
What does it mean to have one's wings clipped?
This is podcaster Joe Kiley from Scheitgeist.
It's for something external to come in and to deprive you of what makes you you. And in Ziggy's case and in the Doc's case, that's an uncaring, unfeeling system which has come in and deprived them of any class mobility. Consider a flightless duck among a load of pigeons. It's no wonder Ziggy connects with this misfit. This also gives us the first moment of genuine tenderness and caring from Ziggy. Caring which is notably absent from his father Frank. We never see Ziggy at home through the entire series. We never see the inside of his house. We never see a stable living situation for him. Frank has his office, and Nick's situation, though not ideal, at least is a stable home life. Whereas Ziggy, he just floats around the docks. He's got no coop. When he does take this duck under his wing, I think Ziggy's lack of a home life dooms him to being an even worse caregiver than his own parents were. And of course, being such a tragic figure, Ziggy dooms everything and everyone he comes in contact with. So the fate of the duck should come as no surprise.
There's a lot of good names, Fuzzy Dunlop. My favorite, and we were talking about this earlier, is the name of Ziggy's duck, Stephen L. Miles.
This is podcaster Andrew Johnston.
Which my brother had to remind me was a lawyer in the 80s and 90s, who is what we call in America an ambulance chaser, which is if you get injured in some way, shape, or form, you call this lawyer and they'll figure out how to sue someone or at least get them to settle out of court, usually get them settled out of court. And he had just ridiculous commercials with like weird pop songs that they put together about Stephen L. Miles. Then he joined Science and Kurtz, and it was this like scary headlights coming at you on a dark highway commercials. A local legend. It's the deepest cut The Wire has for local history. If you happen to have someone arrested and they've called Stephen L. Miles, you just know it's going to be a shit show, because this guy is going to, it's going to look a lot like Better Call Saul. If you've watched Better Call Saul or you know Breaking Bad, that is Stephen L. Miles in a lot of ways. Or Lionel Hutz, if you want to get into a bit of a parody of a Stephen L. Miles character. He's going to harangue the cops and claim like, oh, my client needs X, Y, and Z, and it's just going to cause these troubles. And then when it gets to the court, the judge is going to be like, oh my God, it's Stephen L. Miles. Like, I saw your commercial at 2 a.m. last night while I was filling out affidavits for this bullshit. But mostly, yeah, he's just going to, if it doesn't get settled out of court, it just becomes a circus. And everyone in Maryland, Science Kirk and Miles, everyone in Maryland will tell you, of a certain age, I'm sure if you're young, you probably don't remember, that, yeah, if you got a phone, you've got a lawyer. That was the tagline. Science Kirk and Miles.
Bailey and I, in one of our podcast episodes, discussed Ziggy as the archetypal fool character. And I think in the scene in the bar with the duck, he really is exemplifying that, because he's almost putting on a bit of a performance, you know, mm-hmm. and trying to be very funny. And it is funny in a lot of ways. But as much as he might think that he is getting the
respect or the friendship of the people around him. He's actually just this object of entertainment for all the other patrons of the bar, which is what he's been all along. And especially in that scene where they egg him on to tackle Maui, and then he ends up on top of the shipping container. So I think he's acting that way because that's as close as he can get to some kind of positive relationship with his, fellow stevedores.
Mm-hmm. This is Bailey. I think it also is like his, over and over again, we're told he's sort of seeking this belonging. He's always trying to be part of the crowd. But as of the archetypal fool, you know, a court jester was hired to be the entertainment. And when Ziggy's duck dies, which, as you said, they are sort of complicit in, he's failing at his job as the entertainer. And so he's ousted again. He's never actually part of the group. He's only there as part of, you know, their entertainment or whatever.
We also see Ziggy meeting Double G, George Glikas, and he offers to sell him stolen cars from the docks to sell abroad. More of that in the next episode.
Absolutely.
One thing I really liked, I think this episode was really nicely directed by Tim Van Patten, is his name. And there's a lot of lovely shots in here. There's one in particular when Agent Coltis is talking to the Greek.
Right.
And they meet.
This is on the bench.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's really nicely shot.
The car goes past, and that's the jump cut to move closer to them.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And there's no dialogue. It's you just see them having an exchange and you don't hear any of it, and it's framed with lovely symmetry. I thought it was a really nice touch.
I think that Tim Van Patten is a great jobbing director. I think he's done a few like episodes of Sopranos as well. We'll check out and put this in the show notes, but I think he's kind of well known for these kind of episodes and his flair.
So the funny thing about the Greeks is they're ambiguous the whole time. They show no emotion. They reveal nothing. We're never quite sure what they're doing. We know they're doing illegal things. We know they're sex trafficking, right? Where there's a little human trafficking action. We get that. Yeah, they're involved in drugs. We learn this connection to Prop Joe. But they also seem to just have their fingers in, like, everything. They got an FBI agent on the payroll.
All right, so I have another submission for an alternative epigraph for this episode. This one was a great line. It's from Sergei, and it goes like this. Did he have hands? Did he have a face? Then it wasn't us. Do you like my accent?
I did. I don't know where it came from, but I liked it.
Apologies to all our Eastern European listeners. I tried.
It. Don't talk on the wire, though. Don't talk on the wire.
Yes, I know. You think Sergei would know better.
Yeah. Well, we're not going to say why, but don't talk on the wire. Because that's...
Because it's the name of the show.
Yeah,
guys.
Exactly. Yeah. Okay, that's it for this episode, Stray Rounds. Next week, we'll be coming back with Storm Warnings.
Yes, big thank you, as always, to all the voices you heard in this episode for taking the time to talk to us.
Yeah, and... to Sonix, our legendary app-type transcriber people who transcribe all the interviews. If you want to get some transcription time with them, 100 free minutes, go to Sonix, that's sonix.ai/invite/stripped to get 100 free minutes.
Thanks to Chris Sutera, who does our Season 2 graphics, and Izzy Lawrence, who does our website graphics.
Yeah, to Martin and Sam from the Song by Song podcast for the tune, their version of Way Down in the Hole, which is playing right now.
Thanks, as always, to our lovely producer, Tom Wally, who makes this lyrical audio silk that's flowing into your ears right now.
Lyrical audio silk. Oh,
yeah, I don't know what I'm talking about.
As we said at the top of the show, if you do want to get in touch with us, please do. We are at The Wire Stripped on Twitter, at The Wire Stripped on Facebook, and at The Wire Stripped on Instagram. Do you see what I did there? It's the same. It's the same.
It's the same. It's the name of our show. Come on, yes, guys. You can figure it out. If you can leave us WhatsApp voice memos, then you can definitely use Twitter. Yeah. Subscribe to us, please, if you don't mind. If this is your first time listening to us, we would love if you hit the subscription button. And while you're there, give us a little rating or a little
cheeky 5-star review.
Yeah, just a little nice one. Helps us get found. Helps us find more Wire fans. Helps to get the word out there, because we've got a lovely little thing going. Nice community. We're having great fun. Let's tell everyone, guys. I'm going to stop talking now. Kobe.
Yeah. That's all we want to do, is meet more Wire fans. That's why we started this. We want to meet people who love The Wire, and that's you guys. Thank you very much for listening. Bye.
Bye. I feel like through the course of these links, we're slowly losing our minds.